Raymond Deary on behalf of the plaintiffs, the Knutson family. I would like to reserve the 4 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Proceed.
We ask that this court reverse the summary judgment order in this case. I've been sitting through the calendar this morning, and there's some pretty dramatic differences about this case than some of the cases you've heard this morning. First of all, we have de novo. We also have almost the exact opposite of what you all were discussing in the last case, which is we have a common carrier situation. We have a highest duty of care owed by these defendants. And in this case, for whatever reason, the trial court made a mistake. The trial court misapprehended, misunderstood the standards that apply to the defendants and their duties here. The duties here are pretty simple. Both, and it's two-pronged. It's not just as a common carrier, in this case of an escalator. I don't think that's disputed. But it's also as a premises owner. Both of these defendants owe the same duties on both prongs. So what do we have here? As I was getting ready for oral argument, and I'm looking through the briefs, including my own, it struck me, and I was talking to a colleague in my office, that, you know, I cited cases out of state to say, hey, this is a bedrock principle, and it is, of tort law for hundreds of years in Washington and elsewhere. And then I was talking to my colleague, and I came in the next morning, and he put this on my desk, and I'm like, sometimes it's really simple stuff that you can miss when you get all caught up in the nuances. And what I'm talking about is WIPI 1209, the Washington Pattern Instruction. It states, an entity is not relieved of its duty to a particular duty by delegating or seeking to delegate that duty to another person or entity. That's exactly what the defendants are trying to do here. Say, we hired an escalator company, a maintenance company, to do this, and it's their fault. Well, one of the reasons why that presents a problem for plaintiffs like me is that does offer a different standard of care. It offers the standard of care of ordinary negligence, general duty of care. Here they have a higher duty of care, and that is to make sure that this apparatus is safe and at the highest level of safety. And
well, as far as Macy's, at least, is concerned, they're willing to concede for purposes of summary judgment that they are a common carrier and that they have the highest duty of care, but they say the word notice is in there, and there's no way that we could have possibly known because we don't have somebody on the ground inspecting the elevator. We delegated that.
Well, that would be akin to King County Metro operating our bus system, some of our other transit systems in the state, and saying, well, we've actually contracted out the bus drivers. They're independent contractors, so we're not on the hook because we've delegated that responsibility to someone else. And that's a bedrock principle of tort law, Prosser and Keaton in law school. You can't just delegate these things. Why? Because what we found at the beginning of the last century is that people were getting hurt in a very tremendous amount of time. And the law evolved, and the law said, hey, these are dangerous situations. This is an escalator, an elevator, flying a plane, riding in a bus. And we need to say, we need safety. And the way to ensure safety is to impose upon a duty that is non-delegable. You can't blame someone else. You can't outsource liability. It's your responsibility. Now, the other remedy that's underlying the surface here is Macy's and Kemper, they have contractual indemnity. So no matter who gets hit here, they're going to wrestle this out, and in fact, that's what they're doing. There's third-party practice going on here.
Oh, by the way, has your client directly sued Schindler?
We have not, and for the reasons that I stated briefly in my brief, they have a lower standard of care. And we also have an attorney's fee provision here, and I don't want to be suing anyone more than I believe my legal analysis shows. So we initially sued Macy's, and then Macy's brought in Schindler and Kemper. And
what do you mean you have an attorney fee situation? Are you requesting attorney's fees here?
In the briefing, the court, because one of the three plaintiffs, has a claim less than $10,000.
Oh, that.
So when summary judgment was granted in this case, the court indicated in an order that there can be briefing on the attorney's fees provision. And that's one of the that's one of the pitfalls of being a plaintiff's attorney, is you don't want to sue the wrong person for fear that then they'll say, well, you sued for less than $10,000. You owe us our attorney's fees now. So you have to be very careful. So in my judgment, and I believe the law supports me, that the standard of care here for Macy's is different from Schindler. And in fact, the case that I cited in my brief.
Well, it clearly is. I mean, yeah. If you're a common carrier,
right.
You
so,
have a higher duty than if you're just the elevator maintenance repair company.
Correct. And there's the case that the Prunita case talks exactly about that.
But what is how is your attorney fee request? What's the status of it right now? Did you get attorney fees opposed against you in the trial court?
Well, there was briefing.
That's Mr. Knutson, right?
It's his just claim. For the father. Correct, yeah. Your Honor. What happened was summary judgment was granted. Within the 30 days, I filed my notice of appeal. Then there was a motion for attorney's fees. Then I objected to a portion of their attorney's fees, and by then this went to the Court of Appeals. So that will obviously all be dealt with one way or the other. You obviously know my position on that when it gets remanded back to the trial court.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. Caroline Ketchley for Defendant Macy's. The issue here isn't delegability. The issue here is the scope of the common carrier duty. Macy's did not delegate its common carrier duty, and that duty is to take reasonably foreseeable precautions on behalf of its passengers, commensurate with the practical operation of its business to protect its passengers from the danger of injury from malfunctions or defects, which they, Macy's, knew or should have anticipated from facts and circumstances known to them. Macy's complied with this duty by hiring Schindler, a qualified escalator maintenance company, to perform escalator maintenance that Macy's is prohibited from performing.
Well, so you're not prohibited. There's nothing in the law that prohibits you. You could employ somebody who can do this.
We could.
You could be an employee and you can go around all the Macy's stores and do this. So you made a choice not to do that.
Right.
No
legal
prohibition.
There's nothing that requires Macy's
no legal prohibition.
To employ.
So I'm curious about when you say you didn't delegate away your duty. You appear to be arguing that you did, that you, by contract, arranged so that the knowledge of the person who is charged with maintaining the common carrying instrument, the escalator, would not be your knowledge. How is that not delegating away your duty?
Well, I'm saying that's not an issue in this case because any way you look at it, there's no evidence of notice to Schindler or Macy's of a defect prior to this incident.
How can you say that in view of the three different reports that said that, there was defective maintenance?
They're very conclusory in stating that there's defective maintenance, but from what Macy's had available to them prior to the accident.
Well, no, not Macy's. It's a question of what did Schindler have available to them.
I'm not aware of any evidence in the record that shows that Schindler had any kind of notice.
Well, but the question is knew or should have known, isn't it?
It is for a common carrier. It's not for a maintenance company, which is why there are those two separate standards for a common carrier.
So your position is you can contract away the law.
No, you can contract.
It's what you know, but you know what Schindler knows, right? If it's a non-delegable duty and you seek to delegate it, then you're charged with that knowledge, aren't you?
If it is a non-delegable duty, then yes, obviously we would be charged with that knowledge. But there is no evidence in the record that shows any notice to Schindler or to Macy's, if we're looking at it that way, to show that there was a defect that either of them could reasonably have anticipated. But again, the law in these escalator cases is clear that there is a separate duty between
the owner-operator
and the maintenance company.
Ask you, there's a fellow named Leon Carroll, who's an inspector for Labor and Industries. He found that Schindler had failed to maintain proper maintenance logs, required maintenance had not been performed, and the escalator had a history of mechanical issues such as vibrating, shaking, and emitting grinding sounds and smoke. And then Lurch Bates, that report is in the record, and also, I guess, in the record that was before Judge Downing, and there's some more stuff about how Schindler should have required, should have performed preventive maintenance. There was excessive buildup of dirt, dust, grease, excessive lubrication and grime on major components, and so forth. So in view of somebody coming into the trial, if you go to trial in this case and testifying to that, are you really going to stand up in front of the jury and say, no, there's no way that even Schindler could have known that there was anything wrong?
I'm saying that from Macy's perspective, as a common carrier, I'm not aware of any authority that says you cannot hire an independent contractor to perform these duties for internal maintenance and inspection of the escalator.
But you just got through saying that even Schindler didn't have any notice that there was anything wrong with the escalators. Couldn't have known that that anything like this could have ever happened.
I'm not aware of any evidence in the record that shows that Schindler had any kind of notice.
Okay, so you don't think that these reports of the experts constitute notice that there's something wrong?
No.
Okay, and why not?
Because it's all speculation from what happened after the fact. They went and, I mean, I was
whether or not there is a proper maintenance log is a factual determination. It's not a retrospective conclusion, is it? They either had logs or not. They either did the proper maintenance or not.
Well, I think what would be more important in that situation would be what is in those maintenance logs and if Macy's had notice of some defect with the escalator, which doesn't exist in this case.
Well, what would you think would be proper notice to Schindler that they needed to up their maintenance game?
Either some type of regulation that they're not following or finding something specific when they were doing the preventative maintenance according to their schedule and according to any time Macy's called them.
So if they decided that the right schedule was once every 5 years, and if every 5 years they went in and it seemed like the elevator was functioning fine, then they wouldn't have notice if something occurred.
Well, no, I don't think we're going that far. I think there are separate regulations that weren't argued on summary judgment, and I'm not aware of, not somebody who's representing Schindler, as to what those what the time frame is for conducting that type of inspection. I'm not aware.
Well,
you have
a cross claim against Schindler, right?
We have a third party claim.
Third party claim, right? Okay. So, do you intend to defend Schindler if you go to trial on your third party claim against them and say, well, you know, they didn't have actually any notice at all of anything?
No, I think that would be a huge conflict of interest. I don't intend to defend Schindler. Absolutely not.
Okay.
No. And I think one thing to keep in mind, because we're not, I think the case law, I haven't been presented with any authority that says this common carrier duty is not delegable in this specific situation to obviate the notice requirement. And I think it's important to just keep in mind the
principle
behind.
Haven't you been presented with Nice versus Elmview Group Home and the favorable comments about the restatement of agency?
Right. Well,
so
and
do you
think
the
agency,
state of Washington wouldn't follow the restatement of agency?
I don't think they would find an agency relationship in this case where Macy's didn't have any control over Schindler's performance of the terms of the contract.
Having contracted it away.
Right.
Okay. So basically you're saying that it's okay to delegate a duty by contract, and then you
yes.
don't have a then you haven't delegated your duty because you've made a contract.
Right, and you're complying with that duty.
But they don't
in this
have
case,
the same duty.
No, and I think that's why we have this history of authority.
So you haven't contracted your duty away. You've eliminated the duty. You've
no.
extinguished the duty. No one has the duty as a result of the contract. Because
no,
Schindler has a lesser
argument,
duty,
sir.
And your duty of care, which is greater, is extinguished by the contract. That's your provision. That's your position, right?
No, absolutely not, with respect, Your Honor. My position is that we have complied with our common carrier duty by doing everything that we can to ensure this escalator, this conveyance, is properly maintained. And part of so doing, we are hiring or contracting with the escalator maintenance company to perform these functions that only licensed escalator technicians can perform. There's no allegation here that it was improper to contract with Schindler. That's certainly not the case. So the common carrier duty to Macy's remains the same. What could Macy's know, or what should they have known in this context where all regular maintenance was performed, an inspection of the escalator was done 10 days before the incident, No problems with the escalator were found. Macy's cannot, unless it directly employs a licensed escalator technician, which no law or regulation requires Macy's to do. There's no other way for Macy's to know about these latent defects, which for purposes of this motion, mm-hmm. we have to agree are were the cause of this failure.
Counsel, there was 10 minutes for all the parties, so did you have an intention to split time with Kemper? Because no one mentioned that.
We didn't have an agreement. Would you like to go ahead and take the last couple minutes?
Yeah. Can you stop?
1 minute? Okay. So I think it's important that you brought up the issue of agency.
If you want to yield a minute, then you have to stop now.
Okay. We'll go ahead and do that.
There was 10 minutes per side. There was no request for extra time. So, and I apologize. I assumed you were representing both parties when you came up.
All right. Thank you.
Counsel?
Okay. 1 moment. Would you like the rest of the time? I'll try and make this quick.
Hi. I'm Claudia Shannon. I represent Kemper and Bellevue Square. I'm aligned, actually, with Macy's, so I'm not going to reiterate any of that argument. I would like to point out to the court that the Lurch-Bates report should be stricken, and it's inadmissible under Mother's Head. It was known to plaintiff counsel that this was a consulting expert. It was never.
But it's in the record, and it's also in the record in front of Judge Downing. Isn't the cat out of the bag? And it was not brought up in the trial court to have it stricken?
It was not intended to be in the record. It was put into the record by plaintiff counsel at the, and I'll just read you very quickly, an email that has been actually, I don't know what clerk papers this is of co-counsel's, but it's her reply in summary judgment. And she specifically points out that that report's inadmissible, and she attaches in that report.
Well, whether something's admissible or not is a different question of whether it should be in the record. If you want to get something out of the record, you got to move to strike it seems to me.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but there's no discussion about this, that it shouldn't. What are you trying to? Are you trying to have it not be in the public domain? Is that your objective, or is it just that you don't want us to think about it?
To it as being considered as a part, being considered or being admitted.
You don't want us to think about it. You don't want us to rely on it or
correct.
That's what you're
correct.
Trying to do.
Correct.
Okay.
And just to point out quickly, specifically Mr. Rosen, who was the defense attorney on this case prior to myself, he said to plaintiff counsel in an email, and this is in the record as well, since e-filing has not been completed, you have the opportunity to correct the filing that violates the Washington law by including a report with experts who are designated as consulting experts pursuant Mother's Head. As such, if filing tomorrow mentions the Lurch-Bates in any manner, we will seek terms in MSJ. So he specifically pointed it out to Mr. Deary that this was a consulting expert and do not submit
and
that report.
Do you have the clerk's papers reference for that?
I don't.
All right. Okay. That's okay. We'll
try and find it. But anyway. So, there you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and your honors. A couple things. The Lurch-Bates report was submitted in a companion case. There was another injury that resulted, another lawsuit is Thang Vu. I cited in my papers.
As I understand the issue, following counsel's argument, it doesn't appear that she's trying to, get the court to redact it or black it out or anything like that. She just is arguing that it's inadmissible and therefore should not be considered as part of our analysis.
Yeah, and I have multiple reasons why. And part of the problem the court's having is there's no record because they didn't object. They didn't object in the trial court. They had an opportunity to do so. This was a summary judgment proceeding. They didn't do it in paper. They didn't do it in oral argument. And now suddenly, a year later, whenever it was, they say,
what difference does it really make? I mean, there's three experts. They all agree.
I agree. But I think, not to count my chickens before they hatch, I think this is you're seeing the battle that awaits, and they would prefer that that not be part of the record, you know, if it is remanded in my favor. And my position here and there would be you've waived that argument.
I see.
That's why it's important.
Well, even if they waived it for this, that doesn't mean you could call them at trial. They could still bring the issue up at trial. It's not like it's target. It may be target gone by for the purpose of our reviewing what Judge Downing reviewed to make this discrete ruling.
And by the way, I just wanted to correct the record. You know, with all the reassignments of judges that occur, it was actually Judge Palmer Robinson who heard the hearing. I don't disagree with Your Honor. It's just
But it was Judge Downing that reviewed it in the Fang Fu case.
That might be correct, but I'm talking about in this.
Right, we know that.
Okay. Sorry, I misunderstood. So anyway, bottom line is I really don't have any other things I need to state. I think I put it all in my briefing. I stated in my opening argument today, this is a simple case of trying to outsource liability, trying to outsource your duties, trying to outsource your responsibility. The judge made a mistake, and we ask that this be remanded back for trial on the merits. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.